Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey everybody, welcome to Legion, the officially unofficial podcast for Legion on FX. I'm Jason.
I'm Jim.
Copyright violation. I'm Aaron.
It's the melding of the minds. And by the way, we're literally the voices in your head right now, people, especially if you're wearing earbuds.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Spooky. Stop. Can I be Aubrey Plaza?
Of course. So, what's going on? Like, why are we all here? Is this real?
I think it's because you like just begged for it, like you just like just honest for like a constant pressure exerted until like fine, God, we'll do the podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not true because I totally forgot we were doing this up until a week before.
I know. Well, I saw it online because they had talked about Legion coming out in the spring, and all of a sudden it was February 8th, and I was
right.
Like, oh yeah, we're supposed to do a podcast in 3 days. So here we are. And actually, though, no, I looked back in emails and I have been asking you guys to do something together for a while. And
yeah, because we've been podcasting buddies for like ever since kind of we started doing The Walking Dead. Like it's, you know, we could thank the Walker Stalkers for that. But mm-hmm. They kind of brought all of the very early, you know, significant Walking Dead podcasts together. And mm-hmm. you have a couple drinks with somebody and you get to know them, and we've been wanting to do something here with Jason for a while, and I think I know I've collaborated with an interview with you, and I think you did like a movie thing with Jim.
I did, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like this is just a little bit more of the melding, the merging of the minds
and the words.
That's what I bring to the table.
So it's I also thought it would be kind of cool for this show because for one thing, you guys did your Fargo podcast, and what did you think of that show? Pretty damn good, right?
For the most part.
We really like season one. We really like season two. Deeply unsure of the finale of season two.
Uh-huh.
This was loaded with Fargo talent, yeah?
Yeah, I was just... Fargo's one of my favorite movies. It's probably my favorite Coen brother movie, so I was pretty skeptical that they could do a good TV show of it, and I thought it was awesome. And so Noah Hawley's now my hero, and so when I found out he's show running this Legion. I'm also a comic book geek and I know the character from the comics. So I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. And then he's totally schizophrenic. And so why not do a schizophrenic podcast about it?
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that you know something about this character because I know nothing. Like I maybe have heard the name Legion before, but I know literally nothing about this character.
Well, I was amazed because I was a huge X-Men fan from like the mid-80s to the mid-90s, and somehow like I was aware of the Legion character because he crossed over a few times, but I guess, I mean, I missed most of his big plots, and I guess he was a lot more active in like the New Mutants.
Yeah,
and maybe
right,
like the X-Factor, X-Forces of the which I only got into briefly. But yeah, so I kind of was largely ignorant of this character. But having said that, it felt really cool. And also, I'm just looking into margins for, like, are the X-Men ever going to show up?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Know? Like this in this version of the universe, do the X-Men exist?
Right.
Is this pre-X-Men? Are the X-Men still out there?
And what we know on the business side is that Fox has, I think, the TV and the movie rights for all the X-Men characters. So it would be plausible that at some point they would cross over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I know that Noah Hawley wants this show to stand out on its own first. So
sure.
I don't think that that's going to happen for a while if it does happen, but it could at some point.
Did you get, because the other thing I thought was cool from an X-Men fan perspective is I thought the, especially the psychiatric pajamas they were wearing were very like casual,
yeah.
Xavier school for the gifted, kind of like you could see them like walking the halls and going to classes and that kind of thing.
I hadn't thought about that, but now that you mention it, I was a total fan back in that same time period too. Chris Claremont actually is got me hooked on comics.
Like my peak X-Men era is like the twilight of Chris Claremont and the beginning of like the Jim Lee run.
Jim Lee, yeah.
And like when Peter David was writing X-Factor, I believe, mm-hmm. that's kind of when I got into them because I followed him from like his work on The Incredible Hulk and some Star Trek The Next Generation novels he wrote.
Yeah, he was great on Hulk. So good. Classic run. But yep. So Legion was, I don't want to say too much about the character because maybe some people don't want to hear things that could be potentially spoilers, but I'll just say that, yeah, he was a Claremont character and working, I think, yeah, you're right, in New Mutants with Bill Sienkiewicz as the artist. And that guy's art style, for people who don't know, it's unlike anything else in comics. It's almost like, you know, it's the kind of art where you wonder about the mental health of the artist. Because it's very scribbly and inky and black and just lines jutting out in all directions. So the character of Legion in the comics looks a lot different than Dan Stevens. For one thing, his hair just juts straight up like black straw coming out of his head or something. And I think he was younger, too.
Yeah, I know this. This guy did like that classic Wolverine Havoc crossover graphic novel back in the day, didn't he?
Uh-huh, I think so, yeah.
He's almost got like a Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark kind of ink style.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's got a really, really striking style.
It's an acquired taste, too. At first, when he took over New Mutants, I was like, what the fuck is this? But
right.
After a while, I think it's really, he's a talented guy. Anyway, we should probably get going talking about this episode. So we're going to do it top three highlight style. What that means is each one of us will just say something that we thought was notable about the episode. It could be anything, a character, a scene, a theme, whatever, and then we'll just take turns. So why don't one of you guys go first? Who wants to go first?
I've got one. We can start off with my first highlight, which is the show, the tone that the show strikes as far as like being a superhero show. You know, a lot of superhero shows fall into the trap of we're going to tell the origin story right off the bat. And I feel like this show really shortcuts that, right? Like you see this montage of him growing up, him from like a baby to an adult and being in the psychiatric ward where he is. And that's kind of it as far as like the real true struggle with like, oh, I have some kind of abilities I don't understand. And how do I live my life that with these powers? And here, you know, we kind of toward the end of the episode get back into that. Like but it always feels like the mental issues that he's facing are the prime focus. And I thought that was, you know, really effective setting it apart from like other superhero shows.
I also like to build on that comment, the fact that they use, I think, the culture's baked in knowledge about mutants to see that like he had a fairly conventional childhood until he hit puberty
and discovered
his
powers,
and then stuff started to slide for him. And like, since the majority of the audience, especially the geeky audience, knows that, it gave, you know, for me it was kind of like you know, in the beginning of Up, where like it's this nice little tale, but it's also like this like tragedy that you're seeing happen as well. It's like it's kind of like you know those moments are coming, and when they hit, they're more poignant.
And so, I love the way that his troubled childhood was represented, yeah, in just like 2 minutes. But my favorite little clip there was just the aerial view of the police car with the windows just suddenly blowing out.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, this kid's got
a rough time. Speaking of that, did you notice how many X motifs are in this episode? Like, I thought, like, maybe that was more of a cruciform motif, but, like, the way the windows exploded out was an X, and then there's later when his girlfriend is trying to establish contact in his memories. They're standing under this bridge works. It's forming a giant X. There was a lot of notable, I guess, X-Men motifs, right. Which I think is either, you know, just, like, stuff out there for the fans and also maybe hinting that there will be more of that in the future. I don't know. But there was a lot of it.
I didn't notice that, but I think it's really cool that you did. But I do feel like, and same with Fargo, that everything on the screen is very deliberately placed and stylized.
Which leads me to my first highlight, which I wasn't going to lead off with this, but why not? A lot of the background stuff that's really weird. There's, you know, a lot of obvious, like the devil with the yellow eyes. Yeah. Which kind of reminds me of John Leguizamo's take on the clown from the Spawn movie. You know, like if he's washing his makeup off for the night and is about to go tuck in and he just sleeps naked, that's what the devil with the yellow eyes. But there's also like really brief imagery of like a hookah smoking frog.
What you didn't know, though, is that is actually John Leguizamo without the makeup. Without the prosthetics, and that he actually has an extensive procedure for all his other movies.
You know, some people wear a fat suit. He actually has a thin suit.
He does.
That just tucks in. Well. Yeah. It just tucks, tightens up all that stuff. But, like, there's a lot of stuff I just didn't understand. Like, there's this one image of a smoking frog and other, like, what does all that stuff mean? Or is because I want to dismiss it, but, you know, from my experience with Noah Hawley's other works, like, he does throw in some of that stuff, but then is it, like, you know, is his proclivities to throw, like, a literal fish tornado and a flying ship in, is that kind of inside him, or is that when he's, like, aping the Coen brothers? Like, when he's trying to introduce some and pay homage to their stuff. So, like, I don't really know what... Is a smoking frog just, like, a freaky image, or is it supposed to mean something?
For one thing, I think all this stuff is feeding into the show. They want to make us feel schizophrenic, right? They don't want us... Mm-hmm. They want us to be just like David Haller, who doesn't know what's real and what's not. And so, like, 4 minutes in, his sister who's visiting him and trying to give him birthday cake says, "You're not seeing things that aren't there." And then he kind of looks around and sees strange people hanging out on the fringes of the room that could possibly be real or not. And he doesn't know, and we don't know. So I think maybe some of these other images are like that just to throw us off balance. But they could have deeper meaning, too.
Yeah.
And maybe foreshadowing for future episodes.
Yeah.
Right. Even. Right.
Something's definitely going to happen with that John Leguizamo guy. So my first one is that it kind of follows on from this, just the idea of making us feel schizophrenic and kind of not knowing what's real and what's not real. And I think that was Noah Hawley's goal for this first episode. And the whole first watch through, I wasn't until the very end convinced for sure that anything I was seeing was real. I didn't know if Lenny was actually ever real or just in, you know, that's Aubrey Plaza's character, or in his head. And same thing with Sydney. And then by the end of it, I felt like it was all coalescing and there was actually an objective reality, which kind of made me feel like, oh, you know what? This is actually shaping up to be more of a traditional superhero story than I thought, unless they're going to kind of flip it around on us again and pull the rug out. But I don't think so. I think, you know, in the end he was, he's got these crazy powers that he doesn't know how to control. And so he ends up with this troubled life and he has a fight with his girlfriend and fucks up the kitchen, which was an awesome scene, and ends up in a mental institution. And then I think Sid comes in for him, the girl, and her power is that if you touch her skin, you're going to body swap with her. And that's why she doesn't want to touch anyone. And I think that, then the government or no, they do end up swapping and he gets out and the government ends up picking him up if that is actually the government, and they want to study him and either kill him or use him, depending on how dangerous he turns out to be. But then Sid's people come in and rescue him. And I think that's the objective reality of what was going on. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think there is like a through line to follow here that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, when you're in the experience, like you said, the first time through, I was very confused. The second time through, it all kind of lined up and made perfect sense. And I think the way that they're using, you know, both flashbacks, current day with him, like interviews, and then also these like memories as well.
Astrally walking through one's memories. Yeah.
Right. It's super effective because it gives you a feeling of being unsure what's real while also still just making complete sense in hindsight.
Yeah. All right. I want to devil's advocate for a minute. Is there any danger of reality fatigue? Because this unfortunately comes hot on the heels of like Mr. Robot and Westworld. And I saw some grumblings on our forum about like, oh God, another like what's real, what's not real. Because you're right. We are well grounded, I think, in an objective reality at the end. But there's no guarantee that we won't slip in and out of reality. In fact, the promise is probably the opposite. We are going to be doing a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Is anybody's alarm bells kind of low-key going off about what the public and I guess us as podcasters' tolerance for that kind of stuff is going to be?
So I don't know what Legion's power necessarily is at this point. What are the limits?
Right.
And which other X-Men he's dealing with here, sure. Or ex-villains, whatever. But it at least has that grounding, right, where there's like, you know, each mutant has a set of powers, and if you see something weird, it probably is another mutant messing with him. I don't know that this guy is actually insane. Like, when he sees John Leguizamo sitting over in the corner, this devil with the yellow eyes, that to me says this could be another mutant who's trying to track him or find him or capture him. I think that helps ground it to me. And like I said, and like Jason was talking about, you know, having this kind of, you know, baseline timeline here that we can understand in this first episode, mm-hmm. makes it feel a little less, you know, up in the air as opposed to Mr. Robot.
I do like to add, because I don't think that I agree with you that whatever, because I agree that his powers are poorly understood. I mean, it's certainly like telekinetic stuff, but I don't know how much further it goes beyond that. Mm-hmm. But I think his mental illness has nothing to do with his mutant powers.
Right.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, the X-Men and traditionally have done a lot about, you know, analogies for like, you know, what it's like to grow up as a minority in a popular in a majority culture, what it's like to be gay in a straight society. Like, a lot of these mutants are easy analogies, and they've done that with, like, you know, like Nightcrawler looks like a fucking demon. And, you know, things like that where they're kind of outwardly monstrous, or Beast, who's turned himself into a blue furry dude. This is interesting because it's a mutant that, you know, looks ordinary and he's got these extraordinary powers, but he's also dealing with a severe mental illness, mm-hmm. which I thought it was really great in the hospital scene where, like, you know, he wakes up from a night, like, you know, nightmares are lethal, potentially lethal to himself and others. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, he's trying to do anything harmful. It's just like, how would you stop a guy like that? Jason, real quick. So I don't know who they're alluding to with Sid and the other mutants, but I wondered that one of the government goons, you know, you got the brown suit and green suit. The green suit guy had like this weird hair and mismatched eyes. It reminded me of General Stryker, or maybe it's Major Stryker from X-Men 2, his son. Mm-hmm. Is that an established character?
I don't know. I think at this point we're not supposed to know. But now that you mention him, I just love that little touch of him carving over in the corner, which is sort of a disconcerting uh-huh. thing to do. And then uh-huh. when David asks to be left alone, he puts his little carving down and it's like a guard dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. But just talking about, like, I don't know if the sort of modus operandi of this series going forward is going to be trying to keep us all off edge on knowing what reality is. I think maybe that might just be a first episode thing. And now that it is sort of coalescing and we have a better idea of what's real, it won't work as well to try and keep us off balance. And when you mentioned reality fatigue, that made me actually feel better about that. If that's the way it goes going forward, because I think there's a lot of other things that they can do with just playing around with mental illness and psychology that doesn't have to work that way, you know, as far as keeping us not knowing what's real and what is real.
Yeah, and I very much get the impression of, like, his mental illness comes from not understanding his powers, you know, and being told that his powers are not real, being told that, you know, he didn't really move things with his mind when clearly he did. Like, I feel like that's where a lot of his troubles come from, and that is not a hard thing to, you know, keep straight for the viewers, I think.
That's a different take than mine, but it's equally valid at this point.
Sure.
What's your take?
Oh, I just think that he just genuine, like, you know, just like I could be a normal human and have schizophrenia, I could also be a mutant with schizophrenia. And, like, you know, my normality has nothing to do with disease, nor would my mutant. He is a very powerful mutant that happens to have. And I'm not a psychologist. When I say schizophrenia, I'm just, you know, that's just.
It's not a clinical diagnosis.
And I understand. It's like, that's a big deal. If you're a schizophrenic and listening, I don't want to paint you with a bad brush. But whatever psychosis that he's going through, I don't know that it has anything to do with his powers. And I kind of think it's interesting if it doesn't. But it also could be the opposite, and you're right that him going mad is essentially reality and the psychiatric people gaslighting him and telling him that these things aren't real when they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be more like that, where, for example, you know, Sid, her power makes it so she can't touch people, and that ends up playing into her neuroses, maybe. And then that makes me want to understand, like, this guy that shows up at the end that can just swat away people like flies telepathically. How is that going to play into his neuroses? I think I have a feeling that's where they're going to go with all this stuff. But we'll see. So let's go on to the next one. Jim.
All right. Highlight two, the pacing of this. I thought the pacing was really strong. You know, it starts off kind of quiet, right? We're visiting with this guy in a mental facility, and he's being interviewed. We're kind of getting his backstory a little bit, and there's a moment, the moment when they kiss, him and Sid have the kiss, and everything just goes sideways for about 5 minutes. And, you know, they don't understand each other's powers, and Sid accidentally kills a bunch of people and locks others in their cells. David in her body, like, her character has totally changed, and we are scrambling just as much as these characters are scrambling at this point. And everything seems like it just picks up the pace, and the soundtrack kicks in very strongly with this kind of driving theme. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, it's slowed down again. And I feel like they had this really good ebb and flow throughout this whole pilot.
Mm-hmm. Were you okay with the slower moments?
I was, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a good, confident pacing is, it's okay to have, you know, a slow burn, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like you need him. You need him as a build up to the bigger, faster, more intense moments. And you know, Noah Hawley is good at that.
Yeah, he is. And there were some really awesome, intense, like, beautifully violent moments, too, to counterbalance. Like the kitchen scene, and then the fucking surreal war zone at the end.
Right.
I think that the quiet scenes are helped by, and this is going to be one of mine, one of my highlights is I really appreciate the leads. Dan Stevens, who, like, I have affection for his work on Downton Abbey, I think is really excellent in this. I think.
How'd you find his American accent?
I honestly, it took me 30 seconds to adjust that he's not going to be Cousin Matthew. And then I forgot that he's kind of, I guess, and I don't have a great ear for accents, I find.
I thought he was great.
Yeah. So I thought he's great. And I thought Rachel Keller, who plays Sid, who also was, Simone from season 2 of Fargo. There's something about her and him, like, they remind me kind of a bit of, like, Carrie Elwes and what's the Princess Buttercup?
Robin Wright.
Robin Wright. They're just so visually appealing, and there's just, like, something about them that makes, like, they're just, like, they're a little meet cute and holding hands via scarf and, like, just fun to watch in almost a rom-com kind of way. And I think that especially her, there's something like I remember the thinking that in Fargo, it's like, why is she so damn appealing? But she's got there is something that is very interesting about kind of her look and affect that makes you want to get to know her better. And I think that's her and Dan had really great chemistry. And then you throw in like the off kilter, jittery Aubrey Plaza,
right?
And it's just it's just perfect. And the quiet scenes would be a lot harder to watch if you didn't have such watchable people on the screen.
Right. The sister's interaction was good with him too. She obviously loves him and is scared to death of him.
Oh, that moment where she takes the tools away,
confiscates the axe and the hedge trimmers, and yeah.
So good.
For the gardening in the morning. what was I going to say? So, Sydney, I agree with everything you said. But one thing I wonder is, do you think she actually does love him? Because it seems like probably she was there for him in the first place, like on a mission.
Right. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, how much do they actually swap? How much of each other? Is this like a Vulcan mind meld that happens, or do they literally just swap physical forms?
It seems like Freaky Friday. Like it's just a swap. It's not an exchange.
So this is like the major problem, I guess, the sticking point I have with this love story that has developed in the first episode is that it was maybe shortcut a little for me. And, you know, the first watch through, I'm like, okay, this is way, way too shortcut. Second watch through, I'm like, oh, now I understand. She's actually here on a mission to find this guy. So, of course, she's going to agree to be his girlfriend and, like, try and get in close with him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, first time through, I was very confused by that and didn't like it. Second time through, I understood it.
I will agree that this pilot was very interesting, but to me wasn't emotionally gripping.
Yeah.
Like, for fully 80% of the episode, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I like the style, but I don't know why I care about this guy or this girl. And still at the end, I don't think that ever went away. It just got suppressed by the quite awesome final act of you know, him. Everything that happened after he slipped under the water was pretty fucking righteous. So I guess I need them to, in a hurry, tell me why I should care about David and why I should care about Sydney and what they are trying to do. What are the stakes? Mm-hmm. Because right now I don't get that, and that's that they need to fill that in for me to be really involved on anything more than just this is a cool television episode level.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the comics, from what I remember, and I haven't read them in a long time, is David functions more as a threat, you know? Like, the characters that we do care about are around him, and he's
dangerous.
Yeah, he's a teenager, and he's, you know, in a lot of ways innocent, but you want to take your garden tools away from him. Like, you don't want to be around him too much, and so you're more worried about... So now he's the main character, and, I mean, the scene... that where he asked Sid to be his girlfriend, I felt pretty connected in that moment. But I agree with you. For the most part, I was more just sort of, oh yeah, this looks cool and it's interesting and it shows promise. But I wasn't hooked in as much as I wanted to be.
And I compare that to, like, and this is, you know, this is damning with an unfair example, but like the pilot episode of Mad Men, which introduces Don Draper and Peggy and like their struggles, and also presented an early thing to care about. How is Don going to sell cigarettes in an era where people are starting to understand that cigarettes are killing you? And it has a nice little, like, that pilot is a nice self-contained movie, because, you know, he comes up with it's toasted at the end. And like that immediately, and you understand, like, oh, he's got a girl. Oh shit, he's got a wife and family. And like, there's all these stakes, like right from the jump in that first 60 minutes. Whereas this, you know, of course, you got to do a lot more heavy lifting when you're talking about a crazy mutant with world-altering powers.
Right.
But, you know, I always think of, like, pilots that really, like, Westworld's a good example, where they world-build and kind of grab you by the balls and the heart and make you care about things, like, right away. And I kind of wish they had been able to find a way to walk the emotion side of it a little bit better.
I want to just go a little bit counterbalance with that, even though I just argued this side of it, because my next one is the appeal of the character. And what I do think is appealing about him as a character is he's this volatile combination of power and mental instability. And Dan Stevens does a great job of playing that in a way that's charming a lot of times, and also varied, but in a way that was believable. Like, I loved how sometimes he would take on almost the countenance of like a supervillain, like when mm-hmm. he was, realized that the interrogators were scared of him and he just got this look on his face, or when he was in the pool and he's like, I'm crazy, or whatever he said. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I feel like, since they kind of put us in the same position of not knowing what's real and being on shaky ground, I did feel sympathetic to him. Like, ah, shit, he's had such a tumultuous life. His reality is so unsure that if someone tells him something isn't real, then he will question it. And I think the only thing he really loved meeting Sid, because she gave such a pull to him that was something he could grab onto, and it was something that could propel him in a concrete direction. And so he really kind of stuck on that. I guess what I'm trying to say is I felt for him. I felt sorry for him, and I wanted to see him kind of overcome all these problems that he's having. So, and also I just like that he's he's so innocent in a way, just like I was describing his comic book counterpart, but also he can be so dangerous. I just think that's really, really interesting, and I hope that they can do a lot of great things with it. So I really like the character a lot. I do wish that I had felt more, I don't know what, connected or something, but I do find the character appealing. And I think the way that Dan Stevens played it was really great.
I've got That's a number it. Three.
Go All right. Hit us.
My number three is a singular moment. I think it's probably the best shot in this entire first episode. And it is when David is, I'm going to say, in junior high, and he's cackling over this burning science experiment that he's doing. Mm-hmm. And the teacher is rushing in to put the fire out. Like, there are two kinds of people in this room. One for whom this is the best day of their lives, and one for whom this is the worst day of her life. Like, she is desperately trying to put out this flame and, like, clearly let this situation get out of hand. Like, there are beakers and hoses, and this kid is just like, there's a very clear image I have of like a movie where someone's standing over a fire just dancing and like raising the flames with their fingers, and that's what this kid is doing, and it's hilarious.
That reminds me of when I was in third grade and me and my buddies were at the height of MacGyverism.
Right.
I've told this story on Bald Move Podcast, but we used to cram our lunch in school boxes with like motors we ripped out of Tonka toys and batteries and like solar cells we cabbaged from calculators and try to make shit with it when we had indoor recesses. And one time when a kid was trying to disassemble a battery, it was like a C-cell battery, and he stuck a pair of scissors underneath the cap and was banging on a fist. And if you don't know, that is like a big long diode or anode or cathode that goes into this paste that's essentially battery acid, and that thing flips straight into his eyeball.
Oh.
And suddenly I was just thinking from my teacher's perspective, Miss Owens, God bless you, mm-hmm. she suddenly has this kid just screaming, my eye, and she runs over and she's like, what the hell were you boys doing? And she drags him back to the back class where we had this big like mud sink, mm-hmm. and she's just repeatedly dunking Chris's head in the water to try to flush it out. It's like, you know, yeah. we probably don't pay teachers enough.
Also, I couldn't help but notice the floor-to-ceiling chalkboard here that is nothing but the periodic table of elements.
Right.
I mean, painstakingly drawn up there, I assume, just for this day of class. Mm. This must be, like, the midterm science fair.
No, he could be in, like, you know, some GT,
maybe so.
Gifted Talented Chemistry program.
He's
so.
In a tie, so.
Yeah. That's fancy.
Yeah.
I have a story. It's a little bit from what we were talking about before, but speaking of people questioning this guy's reality all the time, I had this roommate in college who had a schizophrenic episode where he started suddenly hearing voices from the TV and David Letterman was talking to him and everything. And, you know, he woke up in the middle of the night and threw the radio down the stairs and was screaming that we were all on the radio or something. And I did not handle that very well looking back. Like, it just really, really unnerved me. So, But we called his parents, and they didn't seem that interested in coming up and helping him, which I think maybe was part of the problem.
Well, yeah.
But I ended up calling some kind of a psychiatric center, and I was just describing it to him, and I was really shaken by the whole thing. And I could tell really quickly that they thought I was making the whole thing up and that I was crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like, what's your name and where are you? And
oh, man. Like, that's a
no,
movie.
No.
Yep. Jason committed against his will to a psychiatric, yeah. And that's when his kinetic powers manifested.
His superpower, he doesn't have any superpowers, but he is mentally ill.
Crazy.
Right. Is it my turn now?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay, so I want to talk about what I think is the absolute highlight of this episode, which is the visual and audio design. I found it that such, like, they, and here's the thing about Noah Wyle, is I feel like he's a cinematic chameleon. Because,
Noah Wyle, he is
God damn it,
a cinematic chameleon.
Noah, yeah, he can be
a bearded, homeless-looking historian.
Fighting aliens, or he can be a resident surgeon in right. Chicago's busy house. Noah Hawley is like this cinematic chameleon because he does such a great job at, like, aping a Coen style. I think he did a good job of, like, there's some, because we've been watching a lot of James Wan horror movies, and there's a lot of, like, the creepy strings and jarring horns when he would have these psychotic episodes that reminds me of, like, some of the unnerving shit that he does in, like, Insidious and the Conjuring series. Then there's also, like, this crazy kinetic visual style of, like, the, you know, we already talked about the kitchen scene, or, like, mm-hmm. when he's at the end of his rope, so to speak, when he tries to hang himself the extension cord, and then you can see he manifests his power to try to burn through that cord, which then resolves into his sister's sparkler on top of the cake. And all that stuff I just thought was a just an absolute visual treat. Mm-hmm. And leading up to, like, this crazy dance number, which where did you get the this is like Wes Anderson making an X-Men film?
It was Games Radar.
Games Radar. So you're reading a review, and we kind of argued about whether that was valid or not, but I saw a lot of Wes Anderson kind of influence in the what was the name of that facility? The
Clockworks.
The Clockworks facility. With the design of the uniform and the design, like, the retro-futuristic design of facility itself, and then you've got this crazy dance number with this, mm-hmm. you know, quirky foreign music piece. I like watching things that kind of swing for the fences that way and that you haven't quite seen before. And it's weird because I've described this as, like, he's essentially aping all these different styles. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes that kind of mashup is also in itself something new and exciting. And I found just the look and the sound of this episode to be really, really top shelf.
Absolutely. And, yeah, there are so many things, like Carrie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Fight Club, like all these different movies and different things kept coming
up. Or how about when he slips underneath the water and then all of a sudden these burnt corpses start raining in, yeah. Like it's like someone picked the wrong grail or someone opened up the wrong arc. Or and you're like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. And then it led into this all-out assault, which I am a little skeptical because I've been burnt on this before. I wonder how much of the season's budget they spent on that. Because
it's 8 episodes, so
this guy throws around 10-ton boulders. If he can't flip over a car in 2 episodes, I'm going to be calling some low budget bullshit. But that if they can keep this kind of action up even every other episode, I would be very happy.
He'll be chasing a fly in a lab before you know it.
You mentioned that scene real quick where he tries to hang himself. And you said that he manifests his power. Do you think that might have been her power, Sid's power? Or whatever flame power they used in the pool room?
But he didn't hang himself in the psychiatric facility. I know. That's how he ended up in there. Yeah.
Right. So but maybe that was them protecting him from himself.
I mean, that's an interesting theory you're spinning.
I don't know. I'm just
because we don't know. Yeah, they didn't find any evidence of the rope or whatever.
You have a point because that sparkler effect was a little reminiscent of the shit that was going down above the pool right before everybody got turned into, you know, Southern Fried.
And I don't know that he can manifest fire. like or burn anything with his mind.
Yeah.
We only know he can move stuff so far. So
yeah, that's true. That's my guess.
And he can make doors disappear. That was the weirdest manifestation of his power. Yeah, there's some things I know from the comic that I probably should not say. maybe later.
You wouldn't surprise me if he has like a Neapolitan mix of powers. And maybe that's part of his voices shtick. I don't know. What do you make of
Lenny coming, you know, showing up in his sister's basement?
I thought she said she's dead. When she said it was dead, I'm like, how can they kill off Aubrey Plaza in the first episode? And I would almost call bullshit on that, except for I don't know if you've seen the Santa Clarita Diet, but like, you know, they have a very major guest star that I thought was going to be a big part of the series, and they off him in the first episode. So I'm like, okay, I guess this is the thing that people can do. But I don't know if she's really dead or if she's just going to be a figment of his imagination or like his like spectral Jiminy Cricket going forward. I did like how she was in like a very small reflection, even after she disappears. Like you can see her reflected in a mirror in the scene where his sister comes down to confront him about the broken vase.
No.
That's cool. I mean, do you think she's dead? What's going on? I mean, she's certainly a wasted talent if they only brought her back for an occasional flashback.
I think she'll be around. I think she's going to be a spectral Jiminy Cricket, like you said.
Yeah.
Except for I don't know that she's that big of a conscious figure, because it seems like she was an agent of chaos when she was among the living.
That scene turned around pretty quick in the basement, where it was kind of like he was happy to see his old friend, and then she's laughing because people are coming to kill him.
Was there a potential love triangle there? What was Lenny's relationship to David? Was she just trying to see like what is? Did she have designs on David, or was she just like speculating on who he would end up with? Or because, you know, they were talking about the like, oh, it's a dark horse candidate coming in. And, right. But she also seemed kind of disappointed or jealous.
Did she?
I don't know. She's a hard person to read.
I was looking out for that. And if she did, it seemed pretty subtle to me. It seemed for the most part that she was okay with it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not saying she's like obvious, but I felt like there's a flash on her face when Sid came to join when Dan went to go for a Twizzlers, but that might just be because she's a Twizzler person.
Right.
But also when they were in that group therapy session and Sid came in, that seemed like she was a little bummed that like, oh, she's crashing this thing. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Could be. I don't know. I was wondering that too. All right, it's my turn, my number one. Well, we kind of already talked all about Sydney. I like that they had Rolling Stones Like a Rainbow playing for her. She comes in colors. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand why the hospital didn't have a record of her, because wasn't she using that name? And, you know, that sort of question my whole reading of this.
Is it possible that she was spectrally injecting herself into Dan's memories this entire time?
The whole time.
Hmm. Or it could be that, like, these government goons have no, like, they want him to question his reality and not know that there's some kind of free, like, it'd be like Agent Smith lying about Morpheus, right? Like, we have no record as a Morpheus guy, but you know, it's like, I don't know that I can trust anything a green suit, brown suit says
right.
about anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think also they're still, the creators don't want us, our footing to be too sure yet. So it's not going to fully line up totally. All right, man, that's it. That's our whole take. Jim, I haven't really got a sense from you. Did you like it?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think in general?
I thought this was one of the strongest starts to a superhero TV series I've seen. I mean, I do want to get a little more emotional grounding. I do want to get a little more sanity. Some line of plot that I can really follow and say this is real. But I didn't think it was too over the top with that stuff, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to hear what some of you guys thought. So we have some listener responses here. We'll take turns. Let's go in the same order.
All right, Heather Malone says, I loved it. Loved the frenetic jumping about and visuals. Very trippy. Dan Stevens was fantastic, as was Aubrey Plaza. I hope they can keep up the energy and pace.
And I should slide right on to Rima Joe. I really liked it. It's very trippy. Well, you're hearing trippy a lot. I really like the imagery and the visuals. I feel like you get a sense of what it's like to be in David's head. Also like the line, why are the hot ones so crazy, from Lenny. I think I've heard that one before. And so adorable, David and Sydney holding the sash instead of holding hands. Some true longing or romantic moments in the show. The wanting to touch or kiss and not being able to. Sigh. I did find some of the timeline jumping a little confusing at times, but I like how it made you feel as if you were sucked into David's schizophrenia, not knowing what was real and what wasn't. I ended up liking it even if I didn't know the answer. Can't wait for the rest of the season and to get some answers.
Nice. Mr. Duncan Kirk McPherson says, thought it was very interesting, sort of a mix between Stranger Things, X-Men, and Inception. Looking forward to the next episode.
Oh, you know, speaking of that, like this mixing, I got another style that he was aping. That intro of him as a child pastiche montage was very reminiscent of the beginning of The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah.
Instead of the times were changing, it was, what's that song about is it Boy Jack?
Boy Jack, I don't know.
You know, about the he'll be happy or whatever. That reminded me.
I think.
There you go. I thought it reminded me of that a lot.
Yeah, also because there's explosive moments in slow motion. I think both had that, yeah.
Santos S. Sanchez says, I saw it very chaotic. I wasn't really into hanging out in some crazy dude's head. Could be worse. I could have been hanging out in some chick's head, like when I tried to read 50 Shades of Grey. Oh, boy.
Yeah, what we need is
that, is that like POV on some woman? I've never read it.
Well, I'm not going to explain 50 Shades of Grey. but I think it'd be funny if someone, because 50 Shades of Grey is famously shitty fanfic based on Twilight.
Is it what I'm just simply asking what the POV is like?
Yeah, you're in essentially Kristen Stewart's head, except for instead of vampires, it's BDS. Shitty pop culture BDSM.
Right, I think.
But we need Legion. Someone needs to come up with a Legion fanfic that then turns into a semi-successful lampoonable film series that we can also cover on a podcast. Laura Willie Swink. Damn, this show was sick. So much better than Legion was and X-Men 2. His girlfriend. Oh, so maybe that Stryker thing, I was onto something. His girlfriend, Syd Barrett, awesome Easter egg. Kind of reminds me of Rogue. I think she must have mutant ability similar to hers. I'm being spoiled by you, Laura. I'm being spoiled. Yep. The music of the show was amazeballs. I love it when they played 10 seconds of Jane's Addiction's Up the Beach. I was hoping to see more of Aubrey Plaza, even though she's dead, and I can't wait to see if we'll see some additional X-Men cameos. I know it sounds like I'm totally geeking out, but I'm an X-Men fan from way back.
Geek away. Amy Krakauer says, I enjoyed it. Frenetic and visual. I'm happy with how it looks and feels. I wonder how they're going to touch back to the story. We'll watch.
All right. Heather Malone, she double dips here, but I like it. And I specifically appreciate this email because she says, I saw it. Brilliant. And the exclamation marks are all loaded onto I saw it. So she's clearly just the most happy about seeing it. Not necessarily that it was great, but that she saw it.
Brilliant is in all caps.
It's right there in the Webster's style guide. When you quad exclamation point and cap locks, you half an exclamation points carry on to the next word. So okay. I think she's covered.
So it evens out.
Good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's exactly if Brian or no, wait, it's not. Yeah. Is Brian? Dan Stevens' character Brian? Because I keep on wanting to call David. Thank you.
I cannot hear his name in Harvey Fierstein's voice either.
David, where are you? Are you okay, David? I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I feel like that Heather wrote this review as if David would, if he was watching his own show.
Right.
Like he'd be quiet and brilliant, you know.
Are we sure that he didn't touch Heather and now he is Heather?
It could be.
Writing
could
in
be.
Emails? Because so, she sent two.
If so, my monitor should explode right now.
That was the best analysis of a four-word comment I've ever heard in my entire life. Thank you, guys. All right, and with that, that's it for the main part of the show. After we give you our contact information so you can write in like all these guys, we're going to move on to some news about the show and a little bit about next week, and that's going to be just a little bit spoilery, not too much, but we put it at the end for people who like to stay pure and virgin. So before we get to that, if you do want to get in touch with us, you can email us at legion@baldmove.com.
Or you can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out all our other shows at podcastica.com, but especially baldmove.com.
Especially
baldmove. Mostly baldmove.com. Some podcast, but mostly baldmove.com.
A little bit.
baldmove.com.
I can't argue with that. All right. So that's it. That's good. Now let's move on to the news. So this first one's actually not that spoilery. Legion's getting really great reviews everywhere that I've seen. Here's some headlines. Esquire says, Legion's the greatest superhero story ever told on TV.
New York Times. Better than the first season of Daredevil? That's better my high watermark.
Lou Ferrigno Hulk? I don't know.
better than the Italian Spider-Man?
New York Times says Legion brings a genuine X factor to FX. I don't know. That could, I guess, be positive or negative. Variety says, will Legion leave a mark this Emmy season? So they're really, really high on it. I don't know how many episodes the reviewers got to see, but I assume it's more than one.
Right. I do think I can see why a critical person would be more excited about it. There's no costumes, and mm-hmm. it's conventionally like, you know, dangerous men with mental illness. I mean, that's just Emmy bait right there.
I like it better because of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to see a real, you know, twist on it. In fact, I was almost disappointed that it wasn't a little more farther off the beaten path. But you know, I don't know. We'll see. All right, next. So how this show came about. So I just want to talk a little bit about why this show's on. So after Noah Hawley completed work on the first season of Fargo at FX, he was presented with the opportunity to develop the first live action television series based on X-Men comics. He was a fan growing up. He was pitched two different ideas, one of which was a series based on the Hellfire Club, and I didn't say what the other one was, but neither one did he care about. He wanted to do something different and new, and they finally settled on the character of Legion, David Haller, and he pitched the series to producers as, quote, a deconstruction of a villain and a love story. Originally, his script, the first script, was less fractured. It was cohesive and much more regular. But then he reconceived it and decided more, quote, more Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Terrence Malick, more whimsy, more impressionistic, and went in that direction, which is great. I'm glad he did that. And then FX says they're up for having him do as many seasons as he feels he needs to tell the story as long as it's successful, which pretty much seems like a no-brainer. So that's the story of how it came to be. According to Aubrey Plaza at avclub.com, Lenny was originally going to be a man, and then she thought she was reading for the part of Sid, but then Holly decided to change Lenny's gender and give it to her. I just thought that was a little interesting tidbit. Finally, we kind of talked about this, but you know, Fox has the movie and TV rights to X-Men, and so this is about whether they could conceivably cross over. From Mashable.com interview with Noah Hawley, he says, I think on some level that's to be determined. I think there's a bit of a disguise the show wears through its subjectivity, because obviously the X-Men movies take place, these latest ones, some in the 60s and 70s and 80s. So there's a periodness to the movies. And by hiding the period, I think the question is a little more open-ended. That was one thing I felt like some of this felt like late 70s, some more like 50s. Right?
Yeah, but you get a load of that tablet technology to get the brown suit was using.
Modern, yeah. Felt futuristic, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely near future.
Okay.
Which implies if this is all... Now, the other thing is I don't know, because the MCU is carefully constructed so that all the stuff on Netflix is aware of the stuff going on in the big screen. With Fox doing their own thing with X-Men and Spider-Man for so many years, I have no idea. Like, I'm pretty sure it's not connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I have no even guarantee that the X-Men cinematic universe is tied to this smaller cinematic universe.
Sometimes it doesn't even seem like one X-Men movie is very well tied to the next.
Well, I mean, X-Men has a very proud history of, like, you know, you think you know what you saw? Or is the flip the table.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
You think these people are dead? They're not dead. You can't kill X-Men. They went through the Siege Perilous. And yeah, stop asking questions.
Oh, man. I love that so much. Like, you know how people are upset on The Walking Dead when they're all separate for a while? Maybe you guys are, too. Mm-hmm. I always think about the Siege Perilous when that happens. Because,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Wolverine's patch and Storm's a teenage girl now and... Rogue's got no powers and she's shacking up with Magneto in Jurassic Park, and there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in that era of X-Men.
Laura Willie Swink, at least we know one listener knows what the hell we're talking about. All right. Next. So he goes on. Some of that, I think, is just to allow us to prove ourselves and to stand on our own two feet and to say, as we did with Fargo in that first year, for the first 3 hours, there was no connection to the movie at all. So our audience felt, oh, great, this is working on its own. And then in the fourth hour, we introduced the money from the movie and suddenly it was connected. But by that point, we had earned spoilers, by the way. Sorry, guys. But by that point, we had earned the right to be judged on our own merit. And that's it for the news. So next week, did you guys watch either of the teasers?
They had a next week on that I watched.
That's the one I saw, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just going to describe that a little bit for anybody who cares. So it's Holler kind of still questioning himself. I see things. It's not real. It's just my brain. But then that new character, Melanie, that reached out for his hand at the end, she says, that's the old narrative, son. We're going to make you whole again. And you're not schizophrenic. You have powers. The things you see are real. So she's propping him up and basically saying that she needs him because they're at war and they're losing. And he may be the most powerful person alive. And then she also says divisions were created by our government to track people like you and Sid. And the ones they can't control, they kill. So
spoiler alert, she tells everyone they might be the most powerful. Literally everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You, Cyclops, with just the burning eyes. Yeah. You might be the most powerful.
Even the girl with the dragonfly wings. Right. You could be the most powerful
beast.
Angel.
You might be the most powerful beast.
Yeah.
All right. And then my power is IP green. But anyway. So next. And then I guess it looks like his sister's held up in a room, maybe kidnapped by these government people as leverage. And then at the end, it looks like he's in a room and he's about to blow up or something. Malfunction.
Yeah, I think your analysis of maybe they're going to ground it a little more after the first episode.
Yeah,
it seems kind of where they're headed.
Yeah, also, I don't think we mentioned this before, but Jean Smart, who plays, what'd you say her character's name was?
Melanie.
She was a real standout from the first season or the second season of Fargo as well.
Absolutely.
As the matron of the Gernhardts, I think, is what they're, or something like that.
Gerhardts.
Yeah. She really impressed the hell out of me, and I'm excited to see yet another Noah Hawley-ite coming across and bringing a thunder. So,
I think the last time I saw her was in like Designing Women. Did you ever see that?
Sure.
It's like a sitcom back in the 80s.
Delta Burke and
yeah, that's right. Do you guys want to know, now that we're firmly in spoiler territory, what his powers are in the comics, or would you rather not know?
I kind of don't. Like, I kind of want to discover them as someone who doesn't know much about the X-Men.
Yeah, we can roll like so you can play the mildly interesting role. You can be the guy who's clued into the spoilers, and we can be the guys who are not.
Sounds good. Anybody who wants to know that can Google it.
Right. I feel like if I know too much about it, the show runs the risk of being blind to whether the show stands on its own merits or not.
Yeah.
Or whether it leans too heavily on my knowledge.
I kind of wish I didn't know.
Right.
All right, dudes. Thank you guys.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun.
That was really fun.
Yeah. We'll see you guys. See everybody next week.
See you guys next week.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.